You're listening to Reinvent Ideal, dating and life advice for men.
See, you're struggling though. You need some help?
The wisdom you need when you're depressed and no one cares because you're not a chick.
Well, we're all enjoying our day. We're going to lose 12 men to suicide today.
Your weekly red pill prescription.
It's a place for unguarded conversations to investigate with a council of men the riddles of life.
With Cairo Copeland.
Have you ever wondered where did the red pill come from, or how did it come to be? And what I mean is the Red Pill Consortium, this body of knowledge on the internet, this collective body of facts that we put together through empirical data and men sharing notes. That's really what the forums originally were, the subreddit originally was. It was all just men sharing notes. How did this all come to be? Well, where it all comes from is that the pickup community, or the dating advice world, the allure community, put the focus too much on the beginning phases of attracting women and developing relationships with them. They'll teach you how to get her attention, and they teach you how to get phone numbers, how to get dates, how to get sex, but something that we've always lacked here, especially as dating coaches, what we've always lacked is teaching how to keep a relationship with her, and more importantly, keep it one that you yourself are happy to be in. Because what usually happens is, yeah, you get the girl, and you get the relationship, and for the first 6 months it's great, because in the first 6 months you're not really dating her, you're dating her representative. But after the 6 months is over, after the honeymoon's gone, then the relationship sucks. She's constantly just treating you like an ATM, or giving you all this drama, running you up the flagpole with complaining and demands and unreasonable expectations. You know everything you need to know to get her out of your dreams and into your car, but how do you keep her there? How do you keep her admiring you like she did in the beginning? You know, so much hard work went into getting to this point that many guys would like to think that once they finally get the girl and the relationship, now they can just relax and enjoy what she can give you. I'll tell you what, nothing could be further from the truth. And this is where a lot of guys get lazy. Maybe they give up going to the gym. They stop paying attention to how they're dressed and groomed. Some even choose to slack off at work. And they become so comfortable and happy in their personal life because this newfound relationship with the woman they desired, that they forget to do and exhibit the traits that attracted her to him in the first place. And they're going to think to themselves, well, I don't need to do those things. I can relax now. I mean, I got what I was looking for. Can I just enjoy the fruits of my labor right now? I'm afraid I got bad news for you. Because the truth is that you can never stop doing the things that allured her, that attracted her. Imagine if there was a girl in high school that really liked you, but you and her had nothing in common. You liked Formula One racing, and she liked soccer. You were in great shape, but she was overweight and had very poor eating habits. You were successful in your career, and she was still working for minimum wage. Now, after she realized you were out of her league, she went to work on herself. She started watching Formula One racing, became familiar with the drivers, the rules, the cars. She busted her butt off at the gym, became sexy, and looked amazing in her bikinis. And she even got a better paying job than you. I mean, not that that's something we really matter. It doesn't really matter to us guys how much money a woman makes, but she wasn't a loser that was going to be mooching money off of you all the damn time. So as a result, she won your attention, and she won your heart. But then after 6 months of the relationship, she started putting on the weight again, until she got back to her original unattractive body type. She stopped caring about racing, and you watched it alone from that point on. And she lost her job. Didn't bring anything into the household. She mooched off you. Are you going to stay attracted to her? Is this a relationship you want to stay in? Of course not. So you must remain the man that she's still hoping to be good enough to bag. That's what you gotta do here. Because you see, in this example I'm painting here, she became the woman that you wanted, but then she stopped becoming the woman that you wanted, and she went back to being the original fat chick that you were repulsed by. You wouldn't want to stay in that relationship. So when you yourself, as a man, become what women want, you need to stay what women want if you want to keep that woman. Because if you revert to the blue pill, if you revert to being overweight and disgusting, if you revert to being lazy, then yeah, she's going to be repulsed. She's not going to want to be in that relationship with you anymore. You must remain the man that other girls want to be with, because it is other girls that determine your value to her, never her own opinion. You must continue to be, despite the growing familiarity that breeds contempt, the irresistible man that gives off these mysterious vibes and inspires wonder. In the relationship, no matter what stage you find yourself in, you got to never stop flirting with her, never stop alluring her, never stop hitting on her. And just because she calls herself your girlfriend, and even if she posts it all over social media, don't assume that means your work is done. Much like how peeling off all the layers of the onion brings nothing but tears, once she's peeled off all the layers off you, she'll find that there's nothing pleasant left for her either. You must always keep her guessing, never believing that she's figured you out. Aspiring artists of any sort are very good at this. I mean, particularly when their art is their first love. When that's the case, you'll see those artists are constantly striving to put out new works that are original and different from works they've done before. And that's why their adoring fans stay fans, like Kubrick, Stanley Kubrick, the filmmaker, and another one's Christopher Nolan. These filmmakers here, people love them because these guys were constantly trying to stay on top of their game, constantly taking risks, trying something new, trying to never run out of tricks up their sleeve, instead of just constantly doing the same old formula over and over again till the point where it got predictable. And that was the whole problem with like why M. Night Shyamalan's career collapsed, is because his formula just got so predictable. Like, okay, there's a twist coming here at some point. The same with Michael Bay. Why nobody really likes Michael Bay is because all it ever was explosions and action sequences. An action sequence, and more action, more explosions, boom, 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 boom. And so little story. You see, if an artist gets lazy and recycles old ideas and becomes far too predictable, they're abandoned by their loyal fans. Just like Tim Burton. He was originally a very celebrated filmmaker, but when he just kept doing the same thing over and over and over again, people really started to hate him. So you yourself must always strive to create your own kind of art, which means staying on your purpose. That always comes first. You never let her pull you away from it. She must believe that she is in competition for your attention with your purpose, because competition anxiety is what inspires her to do what pleases you. If it's an official relationship, even if you haven't abandoned your option optimization or spinning plates or working a rotation or using what I call a book of beauty, where you're dating non-exclusively, at some point, one of you is likely to want to outlaw the continuation of that. So you're going to say, hey, I want to be exclusive. Or you yourself might decide, you know, I really like this chick here, I want to be exclusive with her. If that's the case, and it's not apparent to her that you have other options, you could be in a lot of trouble here. Now, I'm not saying that you need to always be spinning plates and always rubbing it in her face that you have other options. Don't do that. But when you have a purpose that comes first, it's clear to her that she must work harder for your attention and your affection. And the purpose must always come before the relationship, just as it must always have come before seeking one. She'll be more pleased having even only 1 hour of your undivided attention than she would having days of fractured attention. Because we see women have a unique ability in knowing that you'd rather be doing something else, and they have an even greater ability knowing that you're only not doing it to please her. And they don't like that. They don't like it when you're changing the way you are specifically just to please her. Now, a guy with a purpose is constantly having to adapt to events and changes, which gives off the vibes of weakness. Everything in your life, from your diet to your work to your leisurely activities, should have fallen in line with this purpose. And when she sees that, she's going to think to herself, okay, he's got all these things here that fall in line with his purpose. If I want to be in his life, then I must fall in line with it. As you see, the reinvented man is not in search of fulfillment through a woman. He's already full. She comes to him for her fulfillment in the time he allows her to have his attention. And what this is all to say is that you can't be needy. It's going to kill any allure that you have. It's going to kill any attractions you possibly would have had for you, is when you're being needy. It undermines the possibility of her feeling she must please you to keep you. Because you see, the one less interested in the relationship holds all the power in the relationship. And that's why purpose must come first. And changing yourself in any way, even if it's just changing your mind on a particular subject or opinion for her sake, it says to her, he doesn't trust his own wisdom. It's seen as weakening yourself, and by effect, weakening her trust in you. Now, this doesn't mean never change an opinion if new information clearly disputes the old view that you had. It means do not change it because she disagrees with it or disputes it. If she's wrong, you will blame her and you'll speed up the journey toward the contempt phase that a lot of these relationships end up in. And even if she's right, you're going to feel disempowered. when you change your mind for her. You gotta allow your thoughts and views only to change through independent thinking on your part. That doesn't mean never take criticism. You see, taking criticism in a direct manner with stoicism, that really is the height of masculinity. But to become defensive and get butt hurt is a bitch-like trait. And she's gonna criticize you. No matter how good you are to her, she will criticize you. It's in her nature to test you because that's how she continues to remind herself of whether you're right for her. You see, when they test you, it's not always a calculated move. It's something that's just born out of their biology. We might call it nagging or bitching or just plain being difficult. You can't hold it against them. We call it testing or shit testing when women are being difficult for you. You can't hold that against her because that's a defense mechanism that's built into her. She must do it to know that she's with the right man, because the right man is going to pass those tests, the wrong man is going to fail them. So don't try to make her easier to deal with, and don't hope that she's going to be easier. Be glad when she's difficult, because you see, that's a sign of the fact that she loves you, that she really likes you, she's really into you. When she's ripping at your strengths or your weaknesses, it's not to rip on you, it's only to see that you are above the ripping. It's to see that if you can handle her shit, then you can handle the world's shit. So what I'm saying here is that whenever she's testing you, it's not some intentional act to drive you mad. It's just her way of communication is so different from yours. Because in our evolutionary past, women had to be very subtle or speak with a lot of subtext because there were tremendous consequences for a woman that spoke out of turn. Her communication style is so different that it's going to feel like she's testing you almost all the time. And the test here is to understand what she's trying to communicate. They always say, well, communicate. You always need to communicate. That's the solution that every marriage therapist gives out. You must communicate. But you see, it's not communication. What really matters is comprehension. Communicating with someone who doesn't comprehend what you're trying to say is worthless. So the test here is not, can you communicate, but can you comprehend? And it's really difficult with women, because I'll tell you what, whenever she speaks, you know, it's never clear cut. And a lot of times, when she says one thing, she means the exact opposite, you know? When you're talking to a woman and she talks to you and she says yes, she means no. When she says no, she means yes. When she says maybe, she means no. When she says we need to talk, she means I need to bitch. When she says, oh, I don't want anything, what she means is, oh yes, I want something, and it should be obvious to you. When she says, you're so manly, what she means is, you need a shave and you smell like a pig. When she says, oh, you're certainly attentive tonight, what she means is sex all you ever think about? When she says, I'll be ready in a minute, what she really means is, hey, sit back, get comfortable, and relax, because we're not leaving for a while. And I don't say these as jokes here. This is all true. And it demonstrates a larger point about women in the real world, that what they say most of the time is almost always irrelevant. But the subtext of what they say, what they're not saying, is what they're hoping you'll really pick up on. And this is what angers a lot of guys, and I totally get it, because you're probably thinking to yourself, why can't they just say what they mean and mean what they say? That just goes back to the early days of evolution, even post-evolution, where women were considered property, and there were heavy consequences for them speaking out of turn. You remember the movie 300, when that one Persian says, who is this woman that thinks she can speak among men? That was probably the attitudes back then, at that time, probably true. So they had to develop other ways to say what they wanted to without offending their overpowering superior's ears. So you'll find her way of speaking to be more poetic. It's not clear-cut and punctuated like a man's speech is. See, with men, we have to speak clearly and bluntly with each other because we were often the ones that were fighting all the wars. And in war, you don't have time to translate something said with subtext. You need to be able to say, hey, there's bullets flying at us. There's a bomb that's about to be dropped over our head. That's the way you do it in war. It's very clear-cut because lives are literally on the line. So in moments of emotional chaos, what she may even say is, when she says, I'm going to do this, it's really just her saying what she feels like doing in the moment. It's not that she's actually going to do it. She doesn't really want to stay in and skip the party. She just feels like it in the moment if she says something like that. What she really wants is never what she says she wants. You might ask for something and not really want it. What she's really seeking to find out is if you're weak enough to give in to her requests for fear of displeasing her, of upsetting her. It's testing your ability to see beyond the moment and do what's really right. So whenever she asks for something, you gotta ask yourself, does she really want this? Or is this just to see if I'll do it? Because maybe sometimes you'll deny a request because it interferes with your purpose. Now, if she pouts or holds it against you, then this isn't the woman you should be with. The woman you need to be with should never want to be your first priority. She'll never admit this, probably. She's never going to say, oh, I don't want to be your first priority. But the man she finds ideal is the one that's willing to sacrifice their relationship stoically for the sake of his calling. Remember that scene in Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring, the very first one, when Aragorn is saying goodbye to Arwen. It's right before he goes off to save the world. Now, she acts like she wants him to stay because she's in love with him, but what if he did? And what if he came back when the Fellowship went off to Mordor and he says, hey, that whole I need to save the world thing I told you about? Nah, I was just kidding. I could never do it if it meant leaving you. So I'm gonna stay here with you and never leave your side. I tell you what, Arwen would be so turned off by that that she'd pluck the Evenstar necklace off him. See, when a woman complains, the thing she's complaining about is rarely what she's really upset about. And you don't want to take the substance of what she is saying and respond to it like a lawyer or a politician would in a debate, because her emotions are what's causing her to complain, and trying to speak fact and reason up against her emotions hurts her more than her complaining hurts you. Because the emotional states that she goes in, the moods that she feels and expresses, those are like weather patterns, and they're constantly changing, they're constantly correcting themselves, they'll go from being like a gentle breeze to a severe storm in a short amount of time, and there's hardly ever an explanation for it. And when you try to analyze it, it's going to just make you more and more disappointed, because you're never going to get the answers. But when she complains about a problem, it's not so you'll fix it. You've heard this a gazillion times before, us men being fixers and everything, and women don't want us to be fixers. When she complains, it's only so you'll listen to her. When there's emotional uprisings in her mind, the majority of these uprisings spring into being because she feels unloved, or she feels inadequately loved. And you have to treat her more so as a flower that needs to be watered. You need to treat her as something that needs to be nursed back to health, instead of just a problem that needs to be fixed, or a squeaky wheel that needs to get the oil. The men can exercise emotional intelligence in the sense of questioning their emotions and controlling them. But if you asked a woman to take inventory or question or analyze her emotions, she'd take that as an attack on her existence, because the sole fiber of her existence in her mind is her emotions. And you probably saw this meme here that was going around the internet for a while. It said, when women aren't causing drama in the real world, they're watching TV shows about other women causing drama. And there's a degree of truth to this, and that's what makes it funny. But the way you react to the drama she creates tells her how you'll react to the drama that the world brings you and life brings you. So even in the most explosive situations, you gotta never throw your hands up and just say to her, okay, you know what, do what you want. Not explicitly, not implicitly, because you see, you gotta exercise the masculine trait, or what is traditionally a masculine trait, of decisiveness. When you concede power to her, allowing her to make the decision on what to do, she'll trust her own decision-making ability over yours, and the loss of this trust it'll never get it back, and it's going to bleed over into all other aspects of the relationship. She's in a blissful state after a successful demonstration of your decisiveness. When you take control, when you assume command, she is in a blissful state from that. Let's go back to the example of the overweight girl that worked hard to become attractive to you. Imagine you were with her before she was how you wished her to be. Imagine you were with her back when she was overweight. Well, obviously, telling her that you'd like her to lose weight is the wrong way to go about helping her in her journey to become attractive to you. Even doing it in subtle ways, like telling her that you think we should be eating healthier, or suggesting gym dates. Anything like that is going to be interpreted in the worst possible way. But the correct way to handle things about her that you don't like is to actually do the opposite. You get the undesirable things about her gone by praising her for the very traits of hers that you believe are not yet worthy of praise. Because this is precisely how they become so. You see, women need encouragement. They need you to get her to love herself. And that always works, especially in getting her to love you. You see, cold hard facts, information, statistics, truth, empiricism, all that shit, just doesn't work on women. Works on men, not on women. So if she caught you making a mistake by, say, looking at another woman, man, there's nothing reasonable you can say to make her get over it fast, because her being upset is pretty unreasonable. Your track record of loyalty to her, it's of no meaning. Even the smallest of mistakes can't be excused by a long history of successes in her eyes. And the only way to overcome these unreasonable upsets, she exclaims, is to use humor. Make her laugh. That's it. Again, it's just what causes emotional uprisings within her is her feeling unloved. Most guys are going to take her intense emotions, throw them aside, and saying, she's just going to have to deal with it herself, I'm done. Now, if she wanted to handle it on her own, she wouldn't be in a relationship with you. Because women are highly emotional, And what she needs you for, what makes a woman really attracted to a man and want to stay with him and be loyal to him, is when you can successfully do the job of piercing through her emotions. When you can extinguish her anger and insecurities with humor and with making her feel loved, making her feel special. When she's on fire with her displeasure, you take her in close, you squeeze her tight, and your strength remind her who's above it and why she was attracted to you to begin with. And showing control over your tone of voice, and having a loving look in your eyes, it's going to mean more to her than any words you can say. So how do you prolong the honeymoon in a relationship? You got to embrace polarity, yeah. Choosing to be with the woman that is very much the opposite of you, but a complementary opposite. That's what will prolong the honeymoon. Because you see, masculinity and femininity themselves are polar opposites, and the reason they attract is because the opposite is able to heal you better and vice versa. You see, that the burning feeling of a scrape is made to feel better with ice. And when you're down, when you're in pain, the sweetness of a feminine woman will do more for you than a masculine figure telling you to just toughen up. Now, that being said, don't be vulnerable with her. Don't let her know that you're in emotional pain or anything like that. But this is what it means when there's a relationship that's transformational as opposed to one that's transactional. Another important thing here to talk about is when you're tolerant of things that you really don't like, that's another thing that destroys the honeymoon phase. Because you see, tolerance breeds resentment. And tolerating things that you can't accept, they're going to inspire the eventual demise of your relationship, just like how tolerating parts of your job that you hate, they only fester and inspire more hatred to the point where you wish the office would just burn down, and the superiors at work and your colleagues, they will offer that one-line advice of shit like, oh, this is corporate America. Well, that advice does nothing for you. But you see, intimacy is strengthened when two people who grow more together than they ever could on their own. And there's mutual gifting, there's building each other up. This is why we say men and women are better together than they are apart. We're supposed to be complements to each other. We're not supposed to be adversarial all the time or in competition. But what makes us better together is when we're opposites and my weaknesses are made up for with her strengths and vice versa. When you as a man, your limitations are covered by her and her limitations are covered by you. And that's where the polarization is good. The polarity, I should say, is good. And you see, what I think most often the obstacle to prolonging the honeymoon is the change and growth that just comes with time. You see, it's rare for two people that are together. It's rare for them to grow at the same time, the same rate, and in the same direction. I mean, are you the same person you were a year ago, 6 months ago? Are you even the same person that you were before you started listening to this program? And that's just the natural progression of life, is that men will thirst for freedom, and women will thirst for love. It's only natural for them to grow apart. But both of these thirsts lead to the same place, and that is the truth of being who you really are. When you push each other to grow, you must remember who you really are and what you want, but also who she is and what she's truly seeking. So in the thirst for freedom, another thing that will build up inside you and possibly fester is your desire for other women. You've reached the center of the layers on yours, and there's nothing left to explore, is what you might think. So now those other women that you've overlooked are becoming more tempting. There's just no way to avoid this, and that's why you need sexual intelligence. That's why I stressed it so much. You must understand that having these desires is only natural and not some subtle hint that the universe is trying to give you of what will truly make you happy. And acting on such desires, no matter how refreshing and exciting they are, the good feelings that they inspire are only temporary. And while sex is great, it's only great in the moment. Acting on the urges can complicate life more than the experience is actually worth. That doesn't mean isolate yourself from everything that you believe will make you happy. It's not to suppress yourself either, but to discipline yourself. You see, suppressing yourself is to struggle against your desires, but to discipline yourself is to let your greater interests overrule your lesser interests. Now, this last thing I want to tell you here is probably the most beneficial thing, and something to fall back to when in doubt. See, one thing that often kills relationships earlier than you like, or than you want them to be, ends them sooner than you wanted them to end, is when a guy makes himself far too available and far too curious about her availability. Like, when she texts you, do you return her text right away? And some guys, what they think is, but that was something only had to do in order to get the relationship. I only had to act disinterested then, but now that I'm in the relationship, I should be able to enjoy what I've victoriously attained. And in a perfect world, that'd be correct. You'd be able to shower her with all the attention that her beauty commands you to give her, all the attention that deep down you want to give her, and you'd get all the affection you could ever dream of, whenever you want, and sex would be like this regular ritual every time that you two were around each other. But you see, that's just not the world we live in. In today's world, women have all the options. Now, you should have options as well, working a book of beauty, but once in a relationship, you're probably not going to be working that book, which is perfectly normal. It's probably the right thing to do, the moral thing to do, but you can't let that deter you from generating interest from others. So when you're out at some social gathering, there are other beautiful women around there that you would normally want to approach and go flirt with, go on ahead and talk to them. Your objective isn't to go get phone numbers or get dates or even get sex, but just talk to them like normal human beings, have a normal human-to-human interaction. They'll be responsive to you now that you've shown up with another woman, because, you know, that's the social proof that goes that far. And you'll also find that they're friendly and perhaps even seem interested in you, because you're pre-selected. And a man that shows up alone, the women ignore him, but the same man shows up with a girlfriend, all the other women in the room like him now. But this will work wonders for your relationship when your woman sees this, because it reaffirms that she made the right choice to be with you, because clearly other women approve of you. And it also reminds her that she must do her part in the relationship, that she must keep you as happy as you want to make her. She can't take you for granted. She can't assume you have nowhere else to go anymore. She's going to have competition anxiety. So when in doubt, or when feeling like the moves you're making are having you appear desperate, do what you can to make her believe that she doesn't have you on a leash. Because you see, women are used to being chased, but the threat of losing what they wanted all along, and finally have, when that threat is evident, they will chase. Because you see, competition, it brings out the best in men, and we welcome it with open arms, and that's why sports audiences are disproportionately male. But women are not competitive types, they're more communitarian, because it's more in their femininity to be cooperative. So when they have the need to compete, they feel anxiety. They do whatever they can to relieve themselves of that anxiety. Then it could be things like public displays of affection to let you know, or let all women know that you belong to her. They might even pay for dates. I've had that happen to me, where a girl's paid for dates. And, you know, what's the thing that they can do to ensure that their man stays interested in them? What's the number one tool that they have? It's sex. Even when they're not in the mood, they will give you sex, because they want you to stay put with them. They want to keep you in her court. So when in doubt, inspire a little anxiety. You want to upset the expectations, and everything in their mind becomes desperation to have back what they felt they easily had before. To be a creator of desperation, that's what you want to be. Never on your part, but be the creator and inspirer of her desperation for you. And that is it for us today. I hope this has been helpful for you. If there is something along your journey down this red pill road that I could be of help with, some question that's bugging you, something that you need answers to about reinventing your life as a male into a more ideal life, then send me an email at Cairo@reinventideal.com. That's Cairo@reinventideal.com. And I'll see if I can make an episode out of it. As always, please remember that the bull gets blocked right here, because I am my brother's keeper and I got your back.
Thank you for listening to Reinvent Ideal with Cairo Copeland, your weekly red pill prescription. See more at reinventideal.com.
Have you been wanting to get into stocks, but don't know where to start? Are you tired of watching other people become millionaires from the stock market while you struggle to understand how it even works? Have you wondered how some people seem to have the magic touch when it comes to picking stocks? Does the language used by experts sound confusing and contradicting? What if someone could explain for you how to pick, scrutinize, and determine if a stock is a good bet using easily understood analogies from a movie everyone has seen? The good news is, I've done that. The book Jurassic Stocks explains how to be a superior investor using analogies and examples from the Jurassic Park movie series. It distills the roots of difficult concepts involved in stock analysis in a way that's engaging and keeps readers from rolling their eyes. It presents a model that anyone can easily understand and use for their benefit. Written for the individual investor, the everyday man trying to rise above the competitive giants in the most volatile market. Discover how to pull off the scrutiny needed to pick good stocks
quickly and without getting distracted by useless information. Why you can't just do index funds and be lazy for superior performance. Why you can't take shortcuts like timing the market or invest in companies with good customer experiences. Or how the markets give opportunities to investors and how you can easily recognize them. The key characteristics of stocks that usually outperform and the step-by-step strategy that masters like Warren Buffett and Howard Marks use to become billionaires, made understandable. The book breaks down how to analyze a company by using the fictional company Engine Enterprises from the Jurassic Park series to explain company balance sheets, financial statements, and more. And most importantly, what to look for in those statements to know if you have a winner. This guide will help you value a company quickly and make sense of otherwise problematic and laborious concepts investors must get to succeed. Advice that's made easy to follow and understand. And we all knew as kids that dinosaurs make everything better. Get your copy now of Jurassic Stocks, Stock Market Investing Explained Using Jurassic Park. Available on Kindle, Audible, and paperback. Get your copy today at reinventideal.com/Jurassic. That's reinventideal.com/Jurassic.